Setlist in association with 7 Digital.
This week, what Donald Trump's TikTok ban means for the music industry. Welcome to Setlist, the music business podcast from CMU. I'm Andy Malt, and with me is Chris Cook. Hello, Chris.
Hello there.
As ever, we are going to be taking a look back at some of the biggest and most interesting music industry news stories of the last week. A week when Neil Young sued Donald Trump, which was fun.
Yeah, it finally happened after years, I mean literally years, of artists, I mean years of Neil Young moaning about this, but as regular Setlist listeners will know, years of, well, pretty much every artist ever moaning about Donald Trump using their music at his political rallies. We've actually got someone who has gone legal over it.
Yeah, the originator. Neil Young was, I think, the first artist to complain about Donald Trump using his music. Because the first time he complained about it was after Donald Trump's event to announce his intention to stand for president. So he really got in there early. And since then, Young has regularly asked Trump to stop playing his music. And Trump has ignored him to the point that Neil Young thinks that Trump has made his song Rockin' in the Free World his official theme tune. And Neil Young is particularly unhappy about that. Back in June, Young said that he'd finally found a way to go legal against Trump, who has always used music at his rallies legally, as we've previously discussed. But Neil Young said at that point he wouldn't go legal because he was worried it would distract the president from dealing with the COVID-19 pandemic. Obviously, since then, it's become apparent that Donald Trump is not devoting much time at all to dealing with the COVID-19 pandemic. And so Neil Young has realised that he's probably got a bit of time in his schedule and has therefore filed the necessary legal papers.
Yes, so we now have Neil Young's lawsuit. Usually to access litigation, we have to go into the court databases. Various different American courts have databases where they file lawsuits, but annoyingly, different courts have different databases. So sometimes it can be quite annoying trying to find lawsuits that have been filed. But Neil Young posted it on his website, so it was super easy.
It was very helpful
to find a lawsuit. Now, as you alluded to 2 minutes ago, one of the issues here, and one of the reasons why it's taken Neil Young and every other musician so long to actually go legal, even though they've all been pissed off for a long time that Donald Trump uses their music as his political rallies, is because the copyright law here is complicated because of blanket licensing and collective licensing and BMI and ASCAP. We've talked about that a lot on Setlist in recent weeks, so you can go back and listen to all of that. But it meant that once Neil Young had said, actually, I've decided I can sue, and then I filed the lawsuit, we were like, oh, right, so there's going to be some really interesting information in this lawsuit. It's going to explain the legal technicalities and why the complexities don't apply and why there's a solid case for Neil Young to sue Donald Trump over this. But actually, none of that was in the lawsuit, really, was it? It just said, I own the copyright in my songs, you don't have a license, so you owe me damages. And none of the possible comebacks, which we would expect to come from Donald Trump's lawyers, have been addressed in the lawsuit. So presumably what will now happen is, well, one of two things. Either something will happen behind the scenes and we'll never hear of this again, or a comeback will come from the Trump campaign with all of the technicalities that we've talked about before on Setlist. And at that point, Neil Young and his lawyer will have to respond.
So although Neil Young's lawyers didn't go into all the technicalities of their argument, there were some very strong words in the lawsuit, which opened, this complaint is not intended to disrespect the rights and opinions of American citizens who are free to support the candidate of their choosing. However, Neil Young, in good conscience, cannot allow his music to be used as a theme song for a divisive, un-American campaign of ignorance and hate.
Yeah, so as you say, some strong words there in Neil Young's lawsuit. We will watch how this story develops with interest. But we have to stress that this is not actually the Donald Trump story that we've all gathered here today to talk about.
No, we've got something else lined up. Although later on, we will be discussing Live Nation's optimism for the future, despite seeing its revenues fall by 98% over the second quarter of this year. But first, here it comes. Donald Trump last week issued the executive order that could effectively ban the use of TikTok in the United States from next month. Although it's not only TikTok that is being targeted in that order, the messaging app WeChat is also facing similar sanctions, and that app is owned by a company you might have heard of called Tencent.
Yes, the Chinese web giant Tencent. But let's talk about TikTok first. So this wasn't a surprise. We saw this coming, that Donald Trump was going to put in place the measures that could ultimately result in TikTok being banned within the US by the 15th of September. It wasn't a surprise for two reasons, I suppose. First of all, Donald Trump had told us this was coming in recent weeks.
Yes, so that's a bit of a giveaway.
In recent weeks, both he and advisors close to him have been saying, we're going to ban TikTok, we're going to ban TikTok. Now, cynics out there might remember that when Donald Trump tried to do his comeback rally in Tulsa, and he said there was going to be a million people there, it turned out that there was nowhere near a million people there because lots of kids all over America and the world had been booking tickets to that rally with no intention of going in order to embarrass Trump. And that sort of movement to book tickets for the rally with no intention of going was partly orchestrated by people on TikTok. So you could be cynical and say he's bitter about that and therefore that's why he's shutting it down. But we should add that for quite some time now, politicians on both the left and the right of the political spectrum, Republicans and Democrats in Washington, have been expressing concern about TikTok, owned by the Chinese company ByteDance. And there are various concerns, but the big one is the allegation that ByteDance has access to all of the data that comes in from all of the many, many, many people using a TikTok app all over the world. And that not only does ByteDance have access to that data, but, so some people say, does the Chinese government, and that it's giving the Chinese government the tools to spy on the world, and particularly on Chinese citizens who are not in China. Also allegations that China have access to the platform and they're using it to spread disinformation and so on and so forth. So there have been critics of TikTok and its owner ByteDance, not just around Donald Trump, from various different quarters in American politics, and it has to be said, by politicians elsewhere. So, as we say, the fact that this executive order came in last week wasn't a huge surprise because there has been mounting concern about TikTok and what's happening to the data for quite some time in America. And Trump had indicated that that was going to result in the app being banned.
Now, although we're calling this a TikTok ban, what the order actually says is that from the 15th of September, American citizens and companies will be banned from undertaking any transaction with ByteDance or its subsidiaries. And quite what that means will no doubt be subject of plenty of debate and legal arguments over the next month before this order is actually enacted. And even if it does all go ahead, it's even debatable how successful it will be because obviously people will be able to use things like VPNs to circumvent any blocks put in place by internet service providers. Nevertheless, it's a significant development that adds even further to TikTok's recent political woes, and also increases the urgency of the ongoing talks that could see Microsoft or another American company acquire the TikTok business in the US, and probably a number of other countries too.
Yes, because as we say, this executive order was not a surprise. We saw it coming. And in recent weeks, there have been lots of talks going on between ByteDance and Microsoft in particular, although the word has it they have been talking to some other American companies too, because it's generally agreed that a possible solution to this issue that would overcome the potential ban in the US is for ByteDance to sell TikTok, because ByteDance actually has two TikTok businesses. There's the TikTok business within China, which isn't actually called TikTok, and then there's the TikTok business in the rest of the world. And the big thing that ByteDance always says is these are two separate businesses, we keep them separate, the platform is separate, and that's one of the reasons why ByteDance denied there are actually any issues with the data they are gathering on their users. But ByteDance could sell some or all of the non-China part of the business to another company. And if it could be an American company, then all of the issues around what happens to the data, well, if it's an American company and it's American data, certainly the American government are not going to be concerned about that. Maybe some other governments somewhere else in the world might be, but the American government would not. And so these talks have been ongoing for a number of weeks as to, well, could Microsoft, it's generally Microsoft people have been talking about, acquire TikTok US, and then there was talk of them saying, well, actually, Microsoft don't just want it in the US, and they would want it in some other key, mainly English-speaking countries as well. But then some people have been saying, but hang on a second, if TikTok in America is owned by one company and maybe Australia and Canada, but then TikTok in Europe is owned by another company, i.e. ByteDance, how would that even work? So actually, at one point last week, the word was that Microsoft were now proposing to buy the entirety of TikTok outside of China. So the Chinese version would still be part of ByteDance, and then TikTok Global would be totally spun off from the China company and would become part of Microsoft. So those talks are ongoing. At various points, you've had rumours saying, oh, it's very close to being a done deal. Then other rumours saying, oh, no, there are some issues. It didn't help that although the American government has basically said that that would overcome the concerns and therefore would stop the ban from happening, at one point, Donald Trump did then say, oh, but if that happens, we, the US government, should get a big chunk of the money generated by the sale of TikTok. I have no idea why, but that's one thing Donald Trump has been saying. So basically, you sort of sense that one of the issues here is, although these talks are ongoing, Microsoft is definitely interested. It would give Microsoft, you know, I guess, a cool, very popular app in a space where it hasn't really had much success over the years. So Microsoft is definitely interested. The American government are saying, yes, that's a possible solution. But anything involving Donald Trump, you just don't know what's going to happen next, do you? So I think there remains the fear that even if a deal is done, something Trump says or does could make it all fall apart. But as it currently stands, I guess we don't know. Maybe a Microsoft deal will be done for the US, maybe for everywhere but China, and maybe that's the solution, and maybe this will never happen. Or maybe that deal won't be struck, and then TikTok, in essence, will be banned in the US from next month. But what the executive order last week did was it set a deadline. This all has to be sorted by the 15th of September. Otherwise, as an American citizen, an American company, you will not be allowed to transact with ByteDance or any of its businesses.
This ongoing uncertainty around the future of TikTok in the US is good news for a number of other companies. So the rival app Triller, for one, and also Facebook's Instagram, which last week launched a new service called Reels, which is basically TikTok within Instagram. So both will be hoping that just even the prospect of TikTok being banned from next month will persuade their own users to try out their services a bit more deeply, perhaps.
Yeah, Triller is interesting. I mean, it's been around for a number of years. Like TikTok, it's a short-form video sharing app that has music as a key part of the proposition. They're also doing some interesting stuff on the AI side, Triller, as are TikTok, but Triller are too. But yeah, I mean, Triller has been around for a while, but in recent weeks, they've been really capitalising on all of these issues and the political problems around TikTok, and downloads of the Triller app have been going, you know, through the roof. Triller have also been poaching some of the American creators on TikTok, the Americans who've built a big audience on TikTok doing whatever it is that TikTokers do, stupid short-form videos generally. But some of the American creators have been signed up by Triller. They've then been putting out statements basically saying, oh, I'm a patriotic American creator and I'm also concerned about what's happening at TikTok. So that's why I'm going over to Triller, and it has nothing to do with them writing me a nice big fat check, which I'm sure has happened behind the scenes. So definitely Triller is capitalizing on TikTok's issues in the US. And yeah, interesting timing that Instagram finally put its Reels feature, which is basically a TikTok ripoff, which they started piloting in Brazil last year. They finally put it live across the world. Perfectly timed in many ways, because maybe some American TikTok users will be starting to think, maybe TikTok's not going to be here in a month's time. Maybe I'll go and try out this new feature. I'm already an Instagram user. Maybe I'll go and do all my TikTok nonsense on Instagram instead. So interesting to see these three different apps all competing really aggressively at the moment, especially in the US, but in other countries as well. And of course, all of this is very interesting from a music industry perspective, because music is a key part of all three of those services. And although TikTok is still sorting out some of its music licenses, as is Triller, it has to be said, all three of these see making it ever easier for creators online to put music into their videos, to edit that music. The AI stuff they're working on sort of cleverly edits the music to go with the video. The music's a really key part of the proposition, and therefore this is revenue for the music industry. And of course, record companies are increasingly using, especially TikTok, but they're dabbling with Triller too, and they'll almost certainly be experimenting with Instagram Reels as well. As well as it being revenue for the music industry, they're important marketing tools. So yeah, all of this chaos happening is interesting. It potentially strengthens the negotiating hand of the music industry as these apps compete and they all want better access to music, and maybe that's a way of getting money. Although for the marketeers in the music industry, who've all just spent the last 18 months getting their head around how you do a marketing campaign on TikTok, if TikTok then gets blocked, or through all of this, everybody leaps either to Triller or back to Instagram for Reels, then it'll be music marketeers having to learn a whole new app and a whole new platform yet again. So, very interesting just generally, and very interesting from a music industry perspective, to see what happens in the US now this executive order has been officially issued.
Now, we also mentioned WeChat at the start of this, and while that's not a music app, its owner is interesting for the music industry because it's owned by Chinese web giant Tencent, which is, of course, a shareholder in Universal Music, Warner Music, and Spotify. And it's become an important company for the music industry in a wider sense because obviously it's the market leader in music streaming in China and also has interest in various other streaming companies in emerging markets around the world.
Yes, so for all of those reasons, the WeChat ban was also interesting from a music industry's perspective. It was also more of a surprise. We didn't see that coming in quite the same way as we saw the TikTok app coming. I mean, in China itself, it's impossible to overstate just how big a deal WeChat is. I mean, WeChat performs so many functions for Chinese internet users. It's a messaging app. It's kind of social media. It's a communication tool. It's kind of replaced email. But it's also a payment transaction. So many Chinese, when they're paying for stuff, they will use WeChat for it. So a really big deal in China. But it has users elsewhere in the world, particularly people who are either from China or they have family or friends in China or they work with Chinese companies. And lots of those people, in America, for example, will use WeChat to communicate with their contacts in China, where the messaging apps and social media apps that we use are banned. So it's a really important tool for Americans and Europeans and everyone else to talk to their contacts in China. So actually, for WeChat users in America, this ban will be more problematic than the TikTok ban, because for talking to your contacts in China, there isn't an obvious rival app to jump to. But obviously, as we say, from a music industry's perspective, it's not so much that WeChat is being banned, it's more that a Tencent product is being banned. Although we should stress that if you read the two executive orders that went out last week, the TikTok executive order is quite wide-ranging, and it basically says American citizens and American companies will be banned from doing transactions with ByteDance and any company, subsidiary, division, product that ByteDance is involved in. So it's a ByteDance-wide ban. Whereas the WeChat executive order very explicitly states that this executive order only applies to the WeChat app. It doesn't apply to any of the other Tencent businesses, which, I mean, it's just as well, because as you mentioned, Tencent now has equity in Universal and Warner and Spotify on the music side. It also owns, I think it's about 40% of Epic Games, which in turn owns Fortnite. It has its fingers in many pies, in gaming and in technology. So if there was to be more wide-ranging action taken by the US government against Tencent, that would be a really big deal. But as the executive order is worded, it's very explicit. This is not against Tencent at large. It is specifically against the WeChat app. But nevertheless, the fact these bans, having been talked about for some time, are now formally in place is interesting from music industry's perspective, both TikTok and WeChat, because, well, what next? And opinion is divided. As I say, there are some people, and plenty of people, who are no fans of Trump, who are likewise concerned about Chinese technology companies and Chinese apps gathering data about consumers in the US, North America, Europe, etc. So there are plenty of people who share the concerns. But then there are other people on this side who are saying this is basically Trump, who's down in the opinion polls, desperately trying to appeal to his base, the sort of patriotic, nationalistic American who voted for Trump 4 years ago ahead of this year's presidential election. And it's basically posturing, I'm tough on China, that sort of stuff. But I mean, if that is really the driving force here, well, what next? You know, does Trump take it a step further and a step further in order to pander to his base? And if so, could we see more bans, or even if not outright bans, more pressure being put on Chinese companies that have interests in America? And therefore, could we start to see Tencent being affected in other ways beyond WeChat basically being banned in the United States? So quite a lot of drama going on in the US last week in terms of Chinese tech companies and web giants operating in that country, with some, maybe many, but definitely some ramifications on the music business.
And finally, Live Nation last week announced its latest financial results for the second quarter of 2020, and it said it was very confident about the future, despite the fact that those results showed a 98% drop in revenues year on year as a result of the COVID-19 shutdown.
Yeah, so nobody was expecting Live Nation's quarter two financial report to be full of good news. We knew, given that Live Nation is the biggest live music company in the world, it has its fingers in lots of pies, but most of those pies are somehow linked to live music or live entertainment in general. We knew that with the COVID-19 shutdown in force in all the big markets and many, many countries across the world, that when Live Nation released its figures for that three-month period, April, May and June 2020, that it was going to make grim reading. So no surprises, except, I mean, that 98% figure. Revenues for the second quarter of 2020 were 98% down on 2019. Although not a surprise, I mean, it gives us a really dramatic stat to illustrate just what a big impact the COVID shutdown has had on the live music industry at large, including the biggest player in the business.
Yeah, I mean, the actual revenues that it brought in that quarter were $74 million, which you might say was a respectable amount of money, although that was down from $3.2 billion during the same period in 2019. And overall, Live Nation reported a net loss of $568 million for just that three-month period this year, compared to a $172 million profit the previous year. So, yeah, it's a lot, isn't it?
But, as you already said, despite those figures making grim reading, I suppose because it wasn't a surprise, because everyone was expecting the figures to be that bad, really, what Live Nation tried to do with its letter to investors and the charts that it put out alongside the financials was to try and be as optimistic as possible. And basically, there were two key messages that Live Nation was trying to get over to its investors last week. The first was, we have the cash flow and the cash reserves and the credit to weather this storm. Okay, so even though nobody likes being in this position, it's been a terrible 3 months for the business, but we're going to survive, we're going to weather the storm, we have the reserves to do so. And secondly, while 2020 is going to be the worst year on record for the live music industry, certainly the live music industry in the modern era, hey, 2021 is going to be brilliant, is basically what they were saying. And then they had a few stats that they thought proved that everything was going to be fine in 2021.
Yeah, they said that 86% of consumers had kept hold of tickets for rescheduled shows instead of opting for a refund, which showed that people were keen to get along to those shows eventually. And in festivals, where tickets tend to be more costly, two-thirds of people had still opted to keep hold of their tickets.
Yeah, so basically what they were saying was, when we get things started again next year and the shows start again and the tours start again and in the summer the festivals start again, we're going to pack out our venues, we're going to pack out our festivals, because most people who are meant to be coming to shows in 2020, they haven't asked for a refund, they've kept their tickets, they're going to be coming back, plus we'll sell more tickets. So once we get started again, it's going to be fine. We're going to sell so many tickets in 2021. We're going to very quickly turn this round and we're going to have successes within a year's time, is what Live Nation was saying. There was a statement from Michael Rapino, the boss of the company, who said, we remain confident that fans will return to live events when it is safe to do so. And then he said that the strongest indicator of that was those stats we've just gone through, the fact that so many fans are holding onto their tickets rather than taking the cash refund, even when the cash refund is offered to them.
He also added that lockdown has seen a new market opening up in live streamed concerts, and that had the potential to continue even once the pandemic has ended. He said, virtual concerts have proven to be in huge demand with fans. Given the tremendous popularity of these shows, we are seeing the potential for live streaming to become an additional long-term component of our concert business, allowing fans in other cities or those who can't attend to enjoy the concert as well.
Yeah, there's quite a few people in the music industry and the technology space currently trying to make a grab for the live streaming business, which everybody hopes will not only be a helpful extra revenue stream as the COVID-19 shutdown extends, it could also be a brand new permanent revenue stream even once shutdown is over. And Live Nation are one of the companies dabbling in that space and hoping that that might be the slight silver lining of the incredibly gloomy cloud that has been the COVID-19 shutdown, that in the short term, we can bring in a little bit of extra money by doing these live stream shows, which people are now starting to ticket rather than giving away. But more importantly, even once we have people coming into our venues and our festivals again, we're hopeful that there'll still be live streaming income down the line. So there you go. That's what basically Live Nation was saying. Yes, our figures are as bad as you were expecting. Actually, I think quite a lot of investors are expecting them to be even worse. But nevertheless, as you say, very grim reading, really hammers home just what an impact the COVID-19 shutdown has had on the live industry. But hey, we're optimistic. We'll weather this storm. And then in 2021, it's all going to be fine. That's brilliant. And I mean, I think everybody working in the music industry, even those people who hate Live Nation and or Ticketmaster, and there are, I imagine, a few people out there in the setlist audience who are not Live Nation fans. But nevertheless, I think everybody in the music industry is desperately hoping that that optimism is justified. That yes, if we can just weather the storm for a few more months, maybe we'll have to do it till the end of the year. And not everyone will do that, we should add. There are plenty of independent players who are going to struggle to survive to the end of the year, depending on what support they may or may not be able to get from their governments, depending on what countries they're in. But everybody is hoping that 2021, things are going to start to get back to normal and the live industry at large, including Live Nation, will slowly recover. But it has to be said, that is based on the assumption that things will get started again in 2021. And one interesting thing that we have seen in recent weeks is that whereas at the start of shutdown, when a handful of people suggested that we might not just be talking about a 3-month shutdown or a 6-month shutdown, but we were possibly talking about an 18-month shutdown, most people in the music industry were like, that seems a little bit sensationalist. We're more optimistic than that. And I should say, there are still plenty of people who are optimistic that 2021, maybe not immediately, everything's going to go back to normal. Maybe it'll be the grassroots shows, the smaller shows initially. But slowly but surely, as 2021 progresses, things will slowly get back to something nearing normal. So money starts to come back into the live side. And there are still plenty of people who are pretty certain that's what's going to happen. Certainly, people are booking shows, they're booking tours, they're booking festivals for 2021 like they normally would. But I think on this side over here, in the doom and gloom corner, I am starting to see a few more people who actually understand how the live industry work starting to question whether or not we're being too optimistic and saying, do you know what? Given what we're currently seeing, which is even in those countries where lockdown had started to be relaxed because we thought we were over the worst, we're now seeing these second spikes. We're seeing localized second lockdowns in multiple places around the world. Who knows what happens when we get into the winter season when these sorts of viruses tend to be worse. There are still so many unknowns. And even where governments are saying we think we can get shows started again in a couple of months, they're generally talking about shows with so much social distancing that they're not really commercially viable, or even shows that people want to go to. Basically, what I'm saying is there's an increasing number of pessimists who are starting to say, maybe we are talking about 2022, and most of Live Nation's optimism seems to be based on the idea that things were going to get going again in early 2021.
Yeah, and one of those people who was a bit more pessimistic recently was Glastonbury founder Michael Eavis, who gave an interview to ITV News where he said that they are working towards putting on a festival in 2021, but there was no guarantee that it would actually happen. He said that assumptions that things would be back to normal next summer at the moment were just wishful thinking. He said he was trying to be positive, but nothing was certain at this stage, saying, I'm still hoping I'm going to be running next year and I'm going to be moving heaven and earth to make sure that we do, but that doesn't mean it will necessarily happen.
Yeah, so I suppose in Michael Eavis's case, he wasn't completely doom and gloom, saying it ain't going to happen next year. But he was clearly saying, we're hoping next year will go ahead. We're working on the assumption it will go ahead. But let's be realistic, it is not assured. And he basically said that he felt that the certainty was 2022. And that while he still hoped 2021 would go ahead, that was not certain, was basically what he was saying. So yeah, a prominent figure in the UK live music industry sharing that viewpoint that while we're trying to be optimistic and saying 2021, we're going to start things getting back to normal, realists have to at least acknowledge that there is a risk that the shutdown could last for much longer. Although we should add that while Michael Eavis was a little bit more pessimistic on the chances of a 2021 festival going ahead, he seemed to be more optimistic on the Glastonbury Festival's ability to weather this storm, whatever happens next year, contrasting with what he'd said in the media relatively recently.
Yeah, previously, I think the weekend of what should have been the Glastonbury Festival this year, he said that Glastonbury always has cash reserves in place to survive an unexpected cancellation. So this year, everything was fine. But if they had to go and cancel again next year, they would go bankrupt. But in this ITV interview, he was not saying that. He said he was confident that Glastonbury would survive even in the event of a second cancellation. And he said it would probably come back stronger. So he is now saying that they will survive. It will be back eventually, even if it's not next year. I mean, one thing I think that we haven't really discussed, I don't see discussed, is that everyone talks about, like, well, once we've got a vaccine, everything can go back to how it was. But we don't talk about how long it would take to put that vaccine into action. Because obviously, I mean, it will be an unprecedentedly quick discovery of a vaccine if we have one early next year or late this year. But how long does it take to vaccinate 60 million people? So say we had a vaccine in March, can you vaccinate enough people in time for festivals to go ahead in June? And that I don't think we really know.
No, you're right. That hasn't really been discussed. Could we persuade the government to prioritise people with Glastonbury tickets to get the vaccine? So, yeah, I mean, we're trying to be optimistic and we're not saying that it's wrong to be optimistic. Maybe 2021, I mean, we're not going to see an immediate return to everything in early 2021. But, I mean, maybe we'll start to see things slowly but surely get back to normal. And actually, I mean, it has to be said, even if in January 2021 we got the all clear, if every single artist who had cancelled a show in 2020 started touring in January, February 2021, there would be market saturation and that would cause its own problems. So I think even the optimists are admitting it will take time in 2021 to get things back up and running. But that is what we're all desperately hoping. But as I say, an increasing number of people seeming to at least consider that maybe we are talking about 2022. And what does that mean for the live music industry? Well, I mean, it would be catastrophic for the live music industry. So we'll watch this whole debate closely. But as with everything to do with COVID-19, there's still so many unknowns that we can tell you what people are saying. We can tell you who the optimists are and who the pessimists are. But we can't tell you what's going to happen next because truth is, nobody knows.
Yeah, we also can't tell you because that's all we've got time for this week on this edition of Setlist. Do remember to subscribe, rate, and review if you haven't done that already. If you have any questions or comments on anything we've discussed in this episode, you can email us, setlist@unlimitedmedia.co.uk. There are show notes, which you will find in your podcast player or at setlistpodcast.com with links to more information on everything we've discussed. But for now, that is all from us. Setlist is the music business podcast from CMU. It's presented by Andy Malt and Chris Cook. And for more on CMU, go to completemusicupdate.com.
Setlist is an Unlimited production.